If I say there is hope for a complete recovery for people with a concussion, you say
100%.
And in fact, you didn't only feel it, you were outside the regular medical system because they were not interested in you.
Neuroplasticity actually opens you up to the world, makes it possible to develop, make it possible to rehabilitate.
Traumatic brain injury has been caused a silent epidemic for that reason, because it consists of changes and disabilities that are not obvious to other people.
If, as a physician, you felt you had nothing to offer a patient, then I think ethically you need to say, I don't think there's anything I can offer you. Maybe you should see Dr. M.
Historically, we have called these things mild traumatic brain injuries, which implies that, well, it may be a brain injury, but it's not going to have great consequence, right? And that's frankly not true.
Welcome to Concussion Stories, a live Yana podcast series filled with hope. I'm here to let you know that you are not alone in your post-concussion recovery journey. My name is Melanie, and I spent 6.5 years learning, experimenting, and training in order to find a way to heal myself from post-concussion syndrome. After making a full recovery by the end of 2018, I embarked on this mission to make the recovery journey easier for you. This is why I started this podcast, wrote detailed blog posts and downloadable guides, offer coaching, and also the course that I wish I had back when I was recovering, teaching you everything that I needed to know in order to make my recovery happen. On Concussion Stories, we dig deep while discussing hopeful stories of recovery, as well as the hard stuff in the messy middle. Let's dive right in. In this three-part episode series, you'll meet Eric Thelin, who specializes in neurointensive care after brain injury. He's a resident physician and associate professor at Karolinska University Hospital in Sweden, and he has so much to share about his experience with patients who sustained a concussion or experienced post-concussion symptoms. In this first episode, Eric will tell a little bit about how he himself tries to balance his work and life as a passionate brain injury researcher. Eric also explains his focus to specifically diagnose what is needed for any patient individually. Let's hear Eric Thelin. I'm glad that you could join.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I don't know if I said that, but I'm doing rotations in clinical neurophysiology.
Yes.
And it's part of my residency training in neurology. So it's good because there is no demand on me to actually produce anything. So it's basically like going back to med school again, where you're just running around and learning a lot of new things. So it's good.
That is good. Yeah, it sounds nice. I'd like to open my podcast episodes normally with a more general question in order for the listeners to get to know you a little bit. The question I'd like to ask you is, what outside of work gives you joy in life?
I think that historically I would have said video games. I played a lot of video games growing up. I was a Nintendo person, and it's sort of still, if you can see the background here, you can see the Triforce from the Legend of Zelda series. Mm-hmm. I also have here in the bookcase, they have a head crown from the Half-Life series.
Wow.
I know. So it's definitely something that is still, I think that has a quite extensive part of my life. After having kids, I must say playing video games is usually something you do maybe between 10 and 11 p.m. if you have the time and you're not sleeping. Yeah. And but now my oldest daughter is 6 years old, so I'm like introducing her to playing the guitar. So it's something that I'm doing. But other than that, I love watching movies, shows. I've always have. A lot into like popular culture in general. Mm. And as I'm a Swede, of course. I also love skiing and like cross-country skiing, outdoor activities in general. I have, I play floorball hockey. It's not like the floorball hockey you play in the Netherlands, like land hockey. No. But it's like indoor hockey where the ball is hollow.
Or without ice.
No, well, I played that when I was very little. But I mean, I played, I don't have a ball or a stick in this room, but it's a very common like activity you do in Sweden with a couple of friends in my age that you can sort of play it. And it's a very good exercise. And I still like, actually, I was out running just an hour ago. So that's something I still do just to, and I used to do it to get in shape to do like, I ran marathons and stuff like that. But now I do exercise to keep me fit and alive, basically.
Because probably you've learned that also at work.
Yes. And aerobic activity is good. It has a lot of benefits. Yes.
Yeah. I already got it. You know what? You don't even need work, right? You have so many activities.
That is partly true. And the kids take up the rest of the time. But yes, this is perhaps a problem that sort of life becomes very intertwined with work, especially if you do a lot of research, because you're never really away, are you? The your PhD students, they can sort of always reach you and you always want to be there for them. And but it's you need to establish some sort of work-life balance, and I think everyone has to find their own work-life balance that fits them. And I think that I'm pretty content the way things are now.
Well, I'm happy for you. That sounds really good. How is it for you at work? So what are you focusing on?
We're doing a quite extensive study on mild traumatic brain injury in the Stockholm region. And as you all know, some of you might have had a mild traumatic brain injury and then being sent into the emergency room where you meet an emergency room physician. And he will then decide if you need to have a computerized tomography, a CT scan of your head or not, to see if you have a hemorrhage that will require some sort of either a monitoring in the local hospital or a transfer to your neurosurgical unit, depending a little bit on the severity of the hemorrhage. Yeah. And there are currently a lot of guidelines to screen and detect all these patients, all these hemorrhages. The problem is that they are oversensitive. They're built that way, so you should not miss any hemorrhage. But that results in a lot of unnecessary CT scans being performed. Yeah. Only 1 in 10 using the current guidelines will actually show something, which means there's a lot of unnecessary costs, a lot of unnecessary radiation, a lot of unnecessary waiting time in the emergency room for a lot of people. So we're trying to tweak the guidelines in order to create sort of a calculator for you as an emergency room physician. So you can put in a few data of the patients, and then through some machine learning magic, you will know the risk of this patient having a hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. This is also good for like low and middle income countries where there might be 20 patients that need to have a CT scan, and you need to triage between them who should have it first.
Yeah, and it's also, I'm also very glad that you're working on this because of course it needs to improve this whole, it's not intake, but diagnostic stage at the ER, and also the tools that the doctors have at their disposal in order to accurately diagnose or at all diagnose mild traumatic brain injury, which for our listeners is concussion. Well, it isn't necessarily, but it's mostly translated as such.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And another important aspect of this, which I think your listeners might be more interested in, is also that we plan to do a secondary analysis of this in the future, where we will look at all these patients who have had a visit to the ER 1 year after, if they in any way sought medical attention for conditions such as a headache, pain, vertigo, nausea, sleeping disorders, any sort of pathology that could be related to some sort of post-concussion syndrome. In other words, pathologies that could occur either early on or persist for a while after a more mild traumatic brain injury. And but this is currently in its infancy, but this is something that we will do when we have finished the first step of the study.
And what do you want to do with this data?
We want to create the Stockholm post-concussion syndrome score. So if a patient comes in into the ER, and you will then know what are the risks of this particular patient to seek medical attention for some sort of post-concussion syndrome within a year. And that could be, so it could be easily for the emergency room physician to sort of catch these patients early on. So that if you know that there are a few studies out there already that shows that there are sort of people with pre-existing conditions, so that's depression and other psychiatric illnesses, and female gender actually is also a risk factor for a lot of these self-reported post-concussion syndromes, at least. But I don't know which the sort of the final score will include. But if emergency room physician then pushes in all these factors that we think, and then it comes out that there is a 30% risk. Let's say the 30% risk that this patient will need some sort of medical attention for post-concussive symptoms within a year. Already then, in the emergency room, you can write the referral to a rehab clinic or something, because today it will be impossible. Like, we only have a few, maybe like one or two that are really good of these in Stockholm. So we can't write for everyone, but if we can sort of catch them early on, then it could save society and these patients a lot of pain and suffering and money.
Sounds really, really, really good. And also, I think the step that comes in between that we didn't mention just now is that if physicians put in all of this data, there's a step of awareness in between that they already know that patients may have lingering symptoms. This is something that no doctor, I think, that ever treated me was aware of.
No.
That I could be having symptoms for, well, 6.5 years in my case. And that's a change that you're going to make with this as well.
I hope so. And like I said to you in Antwerpen, that a patient that comes in does not have anything under CT scan, but still have problems, is the worst patient we have, because we think that there is nothing that we can do. There is no pill. There is no perfect, like, golden bullet that will solve all your problems. And like you're saying, I think it's, if these scores in any way can bring attention to these patients, I think that even that will be a very small but valuable step.
Yeah,
towards a better management of these patients.
Yes, yes, and it will indeed create the awareness with the doctors, but also with patients themselves, because no one ever told me that I could be, could have lingering symptoms for so many years. And had I known it, I would have did other things at the beginning in order to make sure that my recovery would be faster.
Now I would love to hear from you. What do you take away from this episode? Is there something that you can apply to your life right away? Head on over to lifejana.com and leave your comment now. And if you want to hear and read more concussion stories, actionable steps, and inspiration, be sure to subscribe to the LifeJana email list while you're there, so that you never miss out on new materials we constantly make for you. If you want to support this podcast, head on over to patreon.com/concussionstories. Thank you for listening to this Concussion Stories episode by LifeJana. May you be well, and may you be happy.